And this last poem, What He Thought. We're full of ourselves, let me tell you. And then the Italians, you know, they had assembled these newsmen and flowers and photographers and all this stuff, and the big questions started coming at us, you know, universal questions, philosophical questions, like, what does the American phrase flat drink mean? So it turned out they were all translating contemporary American novels, so their main interest was the little phrases that they didn't know. So they would ask us these questions, you know, like, cheap date. What does cheap date mean, they asked us, whereupon we felt very proud of ourselves. I mean, we said, we're in Italy, and they are asking us what cheap date means, and so we, you know, we start to give big, grand answers, and the more we talked, the more we realized that, but among us, the Americans, there was quite a difference of definition between the women and the men. But the women tended to see it as a kind of kindness done by women. You know, that you didn't order much or something. But the emphasis was a little more toward that side. Whereas for the men, it had more to do with the distance from the dining room to the hotel or something. I don't know. I mean, it was like a whole different set of terms. So then we suddenly realized it was more about another kind of translation. We really needed translators in the home. You know, it wasn't abroad that was our trouble, so to speak. There were a lot of linguistic hilarities having. I mean, if more Americans knew the languages of the lands they went to, these things wouldn't happen. But like I was telling the people today and in Phoenix that Bob Hass, who was one of the people on that trip, was really good at designing a sentence in English for simultaneous translation. He knew in advance there was going to be a simultaneous translator there, so he designed the phrases of his sentence in such a way, I mean, and this is all extemporaneous, it seemed, such that the first phrase would be admirable and memorable, and the guy could say it, and he could pause. You know, I mean, I could never pause. I would forget the rest of my life if I paused. But he would pause, the guy would say it, then the second phrase would come. It would seem even more admirable. It would build on the first phrase. The guy would translate it. And then the third and culminating phrase would come, and people would gasp, and it would be the right phrase to have at the end of the sentence, and everything would be memorable. And, you know, I would have these sort of limp phrases dangling off at the end because I had to stop. The guy started talking when I was talking, you know. And then I realized, They were asking questions of the men. They started to ask the big questions, but they asked them all of the men, like those questions about, you know, history and the future and the state of art and all those things. And the men answered. They were handily disposing of the questions. And then the journalist turned to me and he said, "And what do you think of feminism?" Yeah. And I said, and I thought, okay, now I can do this the way Hass does. "Because of the extraordinary sacrifices made by decades of women before me who fought, who gave their lifeblood, who gave up everything in order that it might be true, I don't have to worry too much about feminism." And then I heard the guy, the translator, say, and I knew enough Italian to know that he was saying, "She doesn't care about feminism." I knew this was going to go out on the wire services all over Italy. So much for design. My advice is learn your Italian. What He Thought is dedicated to a guy, Fabio Doppelker, to whom I owe the story of the poem entirely, and who deserves much credit. I was too much of a coward to say this to him. My form of making my apologies for underestimating him is to have written the poem and put his name by way of dedication. Someday he'll know. What He Thought. We were supposed to do a job in Italy, and full of our feeling for ourselves, our sense of being, poets from America, We went from Rome to Fano, met the mayor, mulled a couple matters over how to say cheap date. They asked us how to say flat drink. Among Italian literati, we could recognize our counterparts, the academic, the apologist, the arrogant, the amorous, the brazen, and the glib. And there was one administrator, the conservative, in suit of regulation gray, who, like a good tour guide, with measured pace and uninflected tone, narrated sights and histories the hired van hauled us past. Of all, he was most politic and least poetic, so it seemed. Our last few days in Rome, when all but three of the new world bards had flown, I found a book of poems this unprepossessing one had written. It was there in the pensione room, a room he'd recommended, where it must have been abandoned by the German visitor. Was there a bust of them, to whom he had inscribed and dated it a month before? I couldn't read Italian either, so I put the book back into the wardrobe's dark. We last Americans were due to leave tomorrow. For our parting evening then, our host chose something in a family restaurant, and there we sat and chatted, sat and chewed, till, sensible, it was our last big chance to be poetic, make our mark, one of us asked, what's poetry? Is it the fruits and vegetables and marketplace of Campo dei Fiori, or the statue there? Because I was the glib one, I identified the answer instantly. I didn't have to think. The truth is both. It's both, I blurted out. But that was easy. That was easiest to say. What followed taught me something about difficulty. For our underestimated host spoke out all of a sudden with a rising passion, and he said, the statue represents Giordano Bruno, brought to be burned in the public square because of his offense against authority, which was to say the church. His crime was his belief the universe does not revolve around the human being. God is no fixed point or central government, but rather is poured in waves through all things. All things move. If God is not the soul itself, he is the soul of the world. Such was his heresy. The day they brought him forth to die, they feared he might incite the crowd. The man was famous for his eloquence. And so his captors placed upon his face an iron mask in which he could not speak. That is how they burned him. That is how he died, without a word, in front of everyone. And poetry, we'd all put down our forks by now to listen to the man in gray. He went on softly, poetry is what he thought but did not say.